and glad I couldn't see the man because I could hear the heartbreak in his voice as he told Victor what had happened, and the ache in my head was now throbbing. If I saw the poor father, I would have wanted to somehow ease his pain. The man knew precisely why Victor was there when he asked if he'd seen his son. Ridley hadn't been able to take care of himself. However, his father had. He'd shown Victor where he'd buried Ridley in the backyard, under a pear tree. He'd ended his son's life the day before. I was still thinking about that as Victor and I left the lower ward, using the heavily wooded area outside the citadel to avoid any city guards. Many years ago, animals such as deer and wild boar had been plentiful in Wisher's Grove. But only the smallest critters and large predatory birds remained after years of hunting. The grove now served more or less as a border between the haves and have-nots. The thick tree line, all but erasing the cramped living arrangements for the vast majority of Macedonia, from those who lived in homes triple the size of the one Agnes now mourned in. A part of the grove, closer to the center of the city, had been cleared, creating a park where fairs and celebrations were held. People often rode their horses, sold goods, and picnicked on warmer days. The grove ran right into the inner walls of Castle Tierman, literally. Very few traveled the grove, believing it to be haunted by any who'd died there. Or were they haunted by the spirits of guards? Or was it the spirits of haunted animals that roamed between the trees? I wasn't sure. There were so many different versions. Either way, it worked for us because we could easily slip out of the Queen's Gardens and into the grove without being seen, as long as we kept an eye on the patrolling guards. From the grove, one could go anywhere.
"We need to discuss what happened in that house," Victor announced, as we navigated the forest floor with only a sliver of moonlight to guide us. "People have been talking about you."
I knew this was coming.
"And you using your gift back there didn't help matters," he added, keeping his voice low, even though it was unlikely we'd be overheard by anything other than a raccoon or an opossum. "You all but confirmed who you were."
"If people are talking, they haven't said anything," I replied. "And I had to do something. That woman's pain was, it was unbearable for her. She needed a break."
"And it became unbearable for you, too?"
he surmised. When I didn't say anything, he added,
"Your head hurts now."
"It's nothing," I dismissed.
"Nothing?"
he growled.
"I understand why you want to help. I respect that. But it's a risk, Poppy. No one has said anything yet. Maybe they feel indebted to you. But that could change. And you need to be more careful."
"I am careful," I said, even though I couldn't see his expression as he too had lifted his hood to cover his face. I knew he sent me a look of disbelief. I grinned, but it quickly faded. "I know what the risks are."
"And you're prepared to face the consequences if the Duke ever discovers what you're doing,"
he challenged. My stomach dipped as I toyed with a loose thread from my cloak. "I am." Victor cursed under his breath. In any other situation, I would have giggled.
"You're as brave as any guard on the rise."
Taking that as a huge compliment, I smiled. "Well, thank you."
"And just as foolish as any new recruit."
My smile turned upside down. "I take my thank you back."
"I never should have allowed you to begin doing this."
He caught a low-hanging branch, moving it aside.
"You going out among the people poses too much of a risk of discovery."
Dipping under the branch, I looked back at him. "You didn't allow me," I reminded him. "You just couldn't stop me." He stopped, catching my arm and turning me so I faced him.
"I understand why you want to help. You couldn't when your mother and father lay dying."
I flinched. "It has nothing to do with them," That's not true, and you know it. You're trying to make up for what you were unable to do as a child. His voice dropped so low, I could barely hear him over the breeze stirring the leaves above us. But it's more than that. And what is it? I think you want to be caught.
What? You really think that?
I took a step back, pulling free of his hold. You know what the Duke would do if he ever found out?
Trust me, I know. It's not likely I'll forget any of those times I had to help you walk back to your room.
His voice hardened, and heat blasted my cheeks. I hated that. Hated the way I felt for something someone had done to me. Absolutely hated the heavy shame that threatened to choke me.
You take too many risks, Poppy. Even knowing it's not just the Duke or even the Queen you'd have to answer to,
he continued. Sometimes I wonder if you want to be found unworthy. Irritation flared to life, and there was a part of me that recognized it was because Victor was scraping at old wounds and getting too close to a hidden truth I didn't want to delve into and uncover. Whether I'm caught or not, wouldn't the gods already know what I do? There would be no reason for me to take additional risks when nothing is hidden from them.
There's no reason for you to take any risks at all.
Then why have you spent the last 5 or so years training me? I demanded. Because I know why you need to feel like you can defend yourself. He shot back. After what you suffered, what you have to live with, I can understand the need to take your protection into your own hands. But if I had known that it would lead to you putting yourself in situations where you risked exposure, I never would have trained you.
Well, it's too late for that change of heart.
That it is, he sighed. And way to avoid what I just said.
Avoid what?
I asked, pretending ignorance.
You know exactly what I'm talking about.
Shaking my head, I turned and started walking. I don't help those people because I want the gods to find me unworthy. I didn't help Agnes because I hoped she would tell someone and it would get out. I help them because it's already a tragedy that doesn't need to be compounded upon by being forced to watch their loved ones be burned to death. I stepped over a fallen tree limb. My headache worsening. However, it had nothing to do with my gift and everything to do with the conversation.
Sorry to ruin your theory, but I'm not a sadist.
No, he said from behind me. You're not. You're just afraid.
Whipping around, I gaped at him. Afraid?
Of your ascension. Yes, you're afraid. There's no shame in admitting that.
He came forward, stopping in front of me.
At least not to me.
But to others, like my guardians or the priests, it wouldn't be something I could ever admit. They would see that fear as being sacrilegious, as if the only reason I'd have to be afraid would be due to something horrible, and not the fact that I had no idea what would happen to me upon my ascension. If I were to live or die. I closed my eyes.
I understand,
Victor repeated.
You have no idea what will happen. I get it, I do. But Poppy, whether you take these unnecessary risks on purpose or not, regardless of if you're afraid or not, the end result will not change. All you will do is incur the Duke's wrath. That is all.
I opened my eyes and saw nothing but darkness. Because no matter what you do, you are not going to be found unworthy, Victor said. You will ascend. Victor's words kept me up for most of the night, and I ended up skipping our normal morning training session held in one of the old rooms in the all but abandoned part of the castle. Unsurprisingly, Victor hadn't knocked on the old servant's door. If that wasn't evidence enough of how well he knew me, I don't know what would be. I wasn't mad at him. Honestly, I could be annoyed and irritated with him every other day, but I was never mad at him. I didn't think he felt that I was. He'd hit a raw nerve last night, and he was aware of that. I was afraid of my ascension. I knew that. Victor knew that. Who wouldn't be? Although Tawny believed that I would return as an ascended, no one could be sure. Ian wasn't like me. There'd been no rules imposed on him when we'd been in the capital, or while we grew up here. He'd ascended because he was the brother of the maiden, the chosen, and because the queen had petitioned for the exception. So, yes, I was afraid. But was I purposely pushing the envelope and happy dancing over the line in hopes of being found unworthy and stripped of my status? That would be incredibly irrational. I could be quite irrational. Like when I saw a spider, I behaved as if it were the size of a horse with the cold calculation of an assassin. That was irrational. But being found unworthy meant exile, and that was also a death sentence. If I were afraid of dying upon ascension, then getting myself exiled didn't exactly improve the situation. And I was afraid of dying, but my wariness of the ascension was more than that. It wasn't my choice. I had been born into this in the same way that all the second sons and daughters were. Even though none of them seemed to dread their future, it wasn't their choice either. I hadn't been lying or trying to cover up a hidden agenda when I helped Agnes or exposed myself to Marlowe. I did that because I could, because it was my choice. I trained to use a sword and bow because it was my choice. Was there another motive behind sneaking off to watch fights, or swimming naked, visiting gambling dens, or lurking in parts of the castle forbidden to me, and listening in on conversations that I wasn't supposed to hear? Or when I had left my chambers without Victor or Rylan, just so I could spy on the balls held in the Great Hall and people watch in Wisher's Grove? What about the Red Pearl? Letting Hawk kiss me, touch me? All of those things that I'd done, I did because they were my choice. But could it also be what Victor had suggested? What if, deep down, I wasn't just trying to live and experience everything I could before my ascension? What if I was, on some kind of unconscious level, trying to ensure that the ascension never happened? These thoughts troubled me throughout the day, and for once, I wasn't all that restless in my confinement, at least not until the sun began to set. Having dismissed Tawny hours before supper, since there was no reason for her to sit around while I did nothing but morosely stare out the windows, I finally got annoyed with myself and yanked open the door, only to find Rylan lounging across the hall. I drew up short.
"Going somewhere, Pen?"
he asked. "Pen." Rylan was the only one who called me that. I liked it. I let go of the door, and it slowly inched back, bumping my shoulder.
"I don't know." He grinned at me as he ran a hand over his light brown hair. "It's time, isn't it?"
Glancing behind me to the windows, I saw that it was dusk. Surprise flickered through me. I'd wasted an entire day in self-reflection. Priestess Anna Leah would be thrilled to hear that, but not the reasons. Either way, I wanted to punch myself in the face. But it was time. I nodded and started to step out.
"I think you're forgetting something," he said,
tapping a finger to his bearded cheek.
"My veil. Good gods, I'd almost walked out into the hall without it or a hood. Other than my guardians, the Duke and Duchess, and Tawny, only Victor and Rylan were allowed to see me without my veil. Well, the king and queen could, and Ian was permitted, but obviously they weren't here. If anyone else had been in the hall, they would have possibly fallen over in a dead faint. I'll be right back."
His grin increased as I whipped around and hurried back into the room, slipping the veil over my head. It took a little more than a couple of minutes to clasp all the little chains so it was secured in place. Tawny was so much faster at it than I was. I started back out.
Shoes, Pen. You should put some shoes on.
Looking down at myself, I let out a very unladylike groan.
Gods. One moment.
Rylan chuckled. Totally scatterbrained, I towed on my well-worn shoes, which were nothing more than satin and a thin leather sole, then reopened the door.
Having a bad day?
Rylan mused as he joined me in my room.
Having a weird day,
I countered, heading for the old servant's access.
A forgetful one. It must be, for you to not realize the time.
Rylan was right. Unless something was going on, both he and Victor were always ready for me just before dusk. Our pace was quick as we hurried down the narrow, dusty staircase. It emptied out into an area beside the kitchen, and while we took the old access to avoid being seen as much as possible, it wasn't completely avoidable. Kitchen servants stopped mid-step as Rylan and I passed them, their brown garb and white caps making them nearly indistinguishable from one another. I heard a basket of potatoes hit the floor and the harsh, biting reprimand. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw blurred faces bow their heads as if they were praying. I swallowed a groan while Rylan did what he always did and pretended that there was nothing off about their behavior.
You're the child of the gods.
Agnes's words came back to me. The only reason they thought that was because of the veil and the paintings and various artworks representing the maiden. That, and how often it was that they didn't see me. We started toward the banquet hall. From there, we could enter the foyer and be able to access the queen's garden. There'd be more servants, but there really wasn't any other way to access it from within the castle that didn't require scaling a wall. We made it halfway past the long table when one of the many doors on either side opened behind us.
Maiden!
A wave of goosebumps spread over my skin in revulsion. I recognized that voice, and I wanted to keep walking, to pretend I'd suddenly lost my hearing. But Rylan had stopped. If I kept walking, it wouldn't end well for me. Inhaling deeply, I turned to face Lord Brandol Mazeen. I didn't see what I was sure most saw, a dark-haired man who appeared to be in his mid-twenties, handsome and tall. I saw a bully. I saw a cruel man who had long ago forgotten what it was like to be mortal. Unlike with the Duke, who seemed to despise me without cause, I knew precisely why Lord Mazeen found such glee in harassing me. Ian. And it all stemmed from the vainest, most inconsequential thing possible. A year before my brother ascended, he'd bested Lord Mazeen at a game of cards, to which the Lord had ungraciously accused Ian of cheating. I, who probably shouldn't have even been present for the game, had laughed, mainly because the Lord was utterly terrible at poker. From that moment on, the Lord had sought to irritate both Ian and me whenever he got the chance. It only got worse once Ian ascended, and the Lord began to assist the Duke with his lessons. Clasping my hands together, I said nothing as he strode toward me, his long legs encased in black breeches. He wore a black dress shirt, and the darkness of his clothing created a striking contrast against his pale skin and lips the color of ripe berries. His eyes, I didn't like to look into them. They seemed fathomless and empty. Like all ascended, they were such a dark black that the pupils weren't visible. I wondered what his eye color had been before he ascended, or if he even remembered. The Lord may only appear to be in his second decade of life, but I knew he'd ascended after the War of Two Kings, along with the Duke and Duchess. He was hundreds of years old. Lord Mazeen gave a tight, close-lipped smile when I didn't respond.
I'm surprised to see you here,
She's taking her evening walk, Rylan replied, tone flat. As she is allowed.
Eyes like shards of obsidian narrowed on the guard.
I didn't ask the question of you.
I'm taking my walk, I stepped in, answering before Rylan said another word. That unnerving, fathomless gaze shifted to me.
You're going to walk in the garden?
One side of his lips quirked when surprise flickered through me.
Isn't that where you always go at this time of day?
I did. And it was more than a little disconcerting that the Lord was aware of that. I nodded.
She must be on her way now,
Rylan interjected.
As you know, the maiden must not linger.
In other words, I wasn't allowed to interact, not even with the ascended. The Lord knew that. But he disregarded it.
The maiden also must be respectful. I wish to speak with her. And I'm sure the Duke would be most disappointed to learn that she was unwilling to do so.
My spine straightened as a wave of anger swept through me so swiftly, I almost reached for the dagger strapped to my thigh. The reaction shocked me in a way. What would I have done with it if I hadn't stopped? Stabbed him? I almost laughed. But none of this was funny. His thinly veiled threat of speaking to the Duke had been effective. The Lord had backed both Rylan and me into a corner, because even though I was not supposed to interact, the Duke didn't hold Lord Mazin to the same rules as others. If I walked away, I would be punished. So would Rylan. And while my punishment wasn't something to take lightly, it would be nothing compared to what Rylan would face. He could be removed from the royal guard, and the Duke would ensure that it was known that he had fallen out of the Duke's favor. Rylan would soon be unemployed and therefore dishonored. It wouldn't be the same as being exiled, but his life would become measurably more difficult. I squared my shoulders. I would love nothing more than to speak with you. A look of smugness settled on his handsome features, and I wanted nothing more than to kick him in the face.
Come.
He reached out, curling his arm over my shoulders.
I wish to speak in private.
Rylan stepped forward. It's okay, I told him, although it really wasn't. Looking over at him, I willed him to listen. Truly, it's fine. Rylan's jaw hardened as he stared at the Lord, and I could tell he wasn't remotely happy about this, but he nodded curtly. I'll be right here.
Yes, you will,
the Lord replied. Gods. Not all ascended were like the Lord, who wielded his power and station like a poison-tipped sword. But Lord Mazin wasn't even the worst example. He steered me to the left, nearly causing a servant to drop the basket she carried. He seemed completely unaware of her as he strode forward. Whatever hope I had that he'd planned to speak to me a few steps away ended quickly as he took us into one of the shadowy alcoves between the doors. I should have known. He swept aside thick white curtains and all but pulled me into the narrow space where the only source of light was a small sconce above a thickly cushioned chaise. I had no idea what the purpose of these half-hidden rooms was, but on more than one occasion, I'd found myself trapped in them. I stepped back, a little surprised that the Lord allowed it. He watched me, the smirk returning as I positioned myself so I was close to one of the curtains. He sat on the chaise, stretching out his legs as he folded his arms across his chest. Heart thumping, I chose my words carefully. I really cannot linger. If someone were to see me, I would be in trouble with Priestess Analia.
And what would happen if the good priestess of the temples were to hear you were lingering?
He asked, his body appearing loose and relaxed. But I knew better. Appearances could be deceiving. The ascended were fast when they wanted to be. I'd seen them move in a manner that made them nothing more than a blur.
Would she report such misbehavior to the Duke?
He continued. I do so enjoy his lessons.
Disgust was a weed taking root inside me. Of course he enjoyed the Duke's lessons. I'm not sure what she would do.
It might be worth discovering, he mused idly. At least for me.
My fingers curled inward. I don't wish to displease the Duke or the Priestess. His lashes lowered.
I'm sure you would not.
A sharp, stinging pain radiated out from where my nails dug into my palms. What is it that you wish to speak to me about?
You didn't ask your question appropriately.
Searching for restraint and calm, I was grateful for the veil. If he could see my face in its entirety, he'd know exactly what I was feeling, which was red, hot, burning hatred. I didn't know why the Lord found such great entertainment in harassing me, why he found such enjoyment in making me uncomfortable. But he had been this way the last several years. He was worse toward the servants, though. I'd heard the whispered warnings to new staff. Avoid gaining his attention or his displeasure. No matter what, there was a limit to how far he could go with me. With the servants? I didn't believe he felt there was even a line to cross. I lifted my chin. What would you like to discuss with me, Lord Mazin? A hint of a cold smile appeared.
I realized it had been a while since I last saw you.
It had been 16 days since he'd last cornered me, so not long enough.
I've missed you,
he added. Doubtful. My lord, I must be on my way. I sucked in a sharp breath as he rose. One second he was stretched out on the chaise, the next he was directly in front of me.
I'm insulted, he said. I told you I missed you, and your only response was to say you must leave? You wound me.
The fact that he'd said nearly the same words Hawk had uttered no more than 2 nights ago didn't go unnoticed. Neither did the vastly different reactions I had to them. While Hawk had come across teasing, Lord Mazin spoke the words as a warning. I wasn't charmed. I was revolted. It wasn't my intention, I forced out.
You sure?
He asked, and I felt his finger against my jaw before I even saw him move his hand.
I have the distinct impression that was exactly your intent.
It wasn't. I leaned back. He curled his fingers around my chin, holding my head in place. When I took my next breath, I thought his fingers smelled like a flower, musky and sweet.
You should try to be more convincing if you wish me to believe that.
I'm sorry if I was not as convincing as I should be. It took great effort to keep my voice steady. You shouldn't be touching me. He smirked as he trailed his cool thumb along my lower lip. The sensation of thousands of tiny insects skittering over my skin followed.
And why is that?
The Lord knew exactly why. I'm the maiden, I said, nonetheless.
That you are.
He trailed his fingers down my chin over the scratchy lace that covered my throat. His hand continued, brushing over my collarbone. My palm practically burned with the need to feel the hilt of the dagger against it, and my muscles tensed with the knowledge and skill to react, to make him stop. A tremor coursed through me as I fought the desire to fight back. It wouldn't be worth what would happen. I kept telling myself that as his fingers slid down the center of my gown. It wasn't just the fear of punishment. If I showed what I was capable of, the Duke would learn that I had been trained, and I doubted it would take any large leap of logic to determine that Victor was responsible. Yet again, whatever I faced would be nothing compared to what Victor would. But I could only tolerate so much. I took a step back, putting distance between us. Lord Mazin tilted his head and then chuckled softly. Instinct sparked, and I moved to step out from the curtain. But I hadn't been fast enough. He caught me by the hip and turned me. There wasn't even a second to react as his arm clamped around my waist and he hauled me back against him. His other hand remained where it was, between my breasts. The contact of his body against mine, the feel of it, sent a wave of revulsion through me.
"Do you remember your last lesson?"
His breath was icy against my skin, just below the veil.
"I can't imagine you've forgotten."
I hadn't forgotten a single one.
"You didn't make a sound, and I know it had to hurt."
His grip tightened on my waist, and even in my all too limited knowledge of things, I knew what I felt against me.
"Admittedly, you've impressed."
"Thrilled to hear that," I gritted out.
"Ah, there it is," he murmured. "There's that tone, unbecoming of the maiden, the very same one that has gotten you into trouble a time or two, or a dozen. I was wondering when it would make an appearance. I'm sure you also remember what happened the last time it came out."
Of course I remembered that too. My temper had gotten the best of me. I'd snapped back at the Duke, and he'd struck me hard enough that I'd lost consciousness. I came to, only to feel like I'd been run over by a horse, and finding the Duke and the Lord sprawled out on the settee, both appearing to have drunk a bottle's worth of whiskey, while I lay on the floor. For days I'd felt like I'd come down with the flu. I imagine I had a bit of a concussion. Still, seeing the shock widen the Duke's otherwise emotionless gaze had been worth it.
"Perhaps I will go to the Duke myself," he mused. "Tell him how disrespectful you've been."
Fury boiled my blood as I stared at the gray stones of the wall. "Let me go, Lord Mazin."
"You didn't ask nicely enough."
His hips pressed against me, and my skin flushed with rage.
"You didn't say please."
There would be no way I'd say please. Consequences be damned, I'd had enough. I was not his toy. I was the maiden. And while he was incredibly faster and stronger, I knew I could hurt him. I had the element of surprise on my side, and my legs were free. I widened my stance as I felt something damp and wet against my jaw. A scream tore through the alcove, startling the Lord enough that he loosened his hold. I tore free and spun to face him, my chest heaving as I slipped my hand through the slit in my gown to the hilt of the dagger. The Lord muttered something under his breath as the screams came again, high-pitched and full of terror. Taking advantage of the distraction, I darted out from behind the curtain, instead of unsheathing the dagger and slicing off what I was sure was the Lord's most prized possession. The Lord threw aside the curtains as he stormed out. But the screams were bringing others rushing into the banquet hall. Servants, royal guards. There was nothing more Lord Mazin could do now. Through the veil, my gaze met his. I knew it. His nostrils flared. He knew it. The screams came again, ringing out from one of the nearby rooms, drawing my attention. Two doors down, the door was open. Rylan was at my side. "Pen." I skirted his reach and headed toward the sound. What happened in the alcove with the Lord fell to the wayside as my fingers curled around the handle of my dagger. Screams were never a good sign. A woman rushed out, the servant who'd been carrying the basket. Her face leached of all color as her hand opened and closed against her throat. She backed away, shaking her head. I reached the room at the same time Rylan did and looked inside. I saw her immediately. She was lying on an ivory-colored settee, her pale blue gown wrinkled and bunched around her waist. One arm dangled limply off the side, her skin the shade of chalk. I didn't have to open my senses to know she felt no pain, that she'd never feel anything again. I lifted my gaze. Her neck rested against a pillow, neck twisted at an unnatural angle, and,
"You shouldn't see this."
Rylan grabbed me, and this time I didn't move out of his reach. I didn't stop him as he turned me away. But I already saw. I saw the deep puncture wounds.
Chapter 6. Rylan promptly escorted me back to my room while Lord Mazin stood in the doorway, flanked by several others, his gaze fixed on the dead girl. I wanted to push him aside and close the door. Even if it weren't for the state of her undress, with so much flesh exposed, it was a lack of dignity tossed aside for morbid curiosity. She was a person, and while what was left behind was nothing more than a shell, she was someone's daughter, sister, friend. More than anything else, people would talk about how she was found, with the skirt of her gown shoved up and the bodice gathered at the waist. No one else needed to bear witness. I hadn't been given a chance, though. And now Castle Tierman was on virtual lockdown as each and every space in the 100-plus rooms was searched for either the culprit or more victims. Pacing in front of the fireplace, Tawny worried the tiny pearl buttons of her bodice. "It was a craven," she said, the deep violet gown swishing about her legs. "It had to be a craven." I glanced over at Rylan, who leaned against the wall, arms crossed. Normally, he didn't stay inside my room, but tonight was different. Victor was assisting with the search, but I imagine he'd be back soon. With my veil removed, Rylan's gaze met mine. He'd seen that girl. "Do you think it was a craven?" Rylan said nothing. "What else could it have been?" Tawny turned to where I sat in the chair. "You said yourself she was bit."
"I said it looked like a bite, but it didn't look like a craven bite," I told her.
"I know you've seen what a craven can do." She sat across from me, her fingers still twisting the pearl, just as Agnes had done to the button on her blouse.
"But how can you be sure?"
"The craven have 4 elongated canines," I explained, and she nodded. This was common knowledge.
"But she only had 2 marks, as if
2 sharp fangs had penetrated her throat,"
Rylan finished. Tawny's head whipped in his direction.
"What if it was accursed?
Someone who hadn't fully turned yet?" she asked.
"Then it would look like either normal teeth marks or a bite from a craven,"
Rylan answered, shaking his head as he stared out the window toward the rise.
"I've never seen anything like that."
I had to agree with him. She was pale, and it wasn't just the shroud of death. It was like she had no blood in her, and even if it were a 2-fanged craven, my nose scrunched, it would have been messier, not so precise. She looked like
what?
My gaze dropped to my hands as the image of the woman reappeared. She'd been with someone, willing or not, and as far as I knew, craven weren't interested in anything but blood.
"It just looked like someone had been in that room with her."
Tawny sat back.
"If it wasn't a craven, then who would do something like that?"
"There were many people in and out of the castle. Servants, guards, visitors, the ascended. But that didn't make sense either. That wound appeared to be right over her jugular. There should have been blood everywhere. And I didn't even see a drop of it."
That is more than just a little strange.
I nodded. And her neck was clearly broken. I know of no craven that would do that.
Tawny folded her arms around herself. And I don't want to know of any person capable of that.
Neither did I. But we all knew that people were capable of all manner of atrocities. And so were the Ascended. After all, they too had been mortal at one time, and the capacity for cruelty seemed to be one of the few traits some carried over. My thoughts wandered to Lord Mazeen. He was cruel, a bully, and based on our latest interaction, I suspected that he could be much worse. But was he capable of what was done? I shuddered. Even if he were, why would he do it? And how? I didn't have an answer for that. There was only one thing I could think of that could do that. But it seemed too unreal to believe. Did you recognize her? Tawny asked softly. I didn't, but I have to think she was a lady in wait, or perhaps a visitor based on her gown, I told her. Tawny nodded silently, returning to twisting the pearl on her bodice. Silence crept into the space, and Victor arrived not long after, stepping into the room to speak quietly to Rylan. I scooted to the edge of my seat when he stepped away from Rylan, sighing as he sat on the edge of the chest that rested at the foot of my bed. Every inch of this castle was searched, and we found no other victims or craven, he said, leaning forward. Commander Jansen believes the grounds are safe.
He paused, squinting as he lifted his gaze.
Relatively speaking, that is.
Did you see her? I asked, and he nodded. Do you think it was a craven attack?
I've never seen anything like that, he replied, repeating what Rylan had said.
What would that even mean?
I don't know,
he stated, rubbing his hand against his forehead. My attention zeroed in on him, noting how he massaged the skin above his brow and how he'd squinted when he looked to where we sat near the oil lamps. Sometimes Victor got headaches, not like the ones I got after opening up my senses or using my gifts too much, but far more severe, where light and sound made him nauseous and his head pulse. I opened up my senses and immediately felt the sharp, pounding ache behind my eyes. I quickly severed the connection, and it was like visualizing a cord connecting me to him being snipped in two. The last thing I wanted was to end up with another throbbing headache keeping me up. If it wasn't a craven, then are there any suspects? Tawny asked.
The Duke believes it was the work of a dissenter.
What? I demanded as I rose.
Here? In the castle?
Tawny cried.
That is what he believes.
Victor lifted his head as I walked over to him, his gaze wary.
And what do you believe?
Rylan asked from where he still stood by the door.
Because I'm unsure how a dissenter could have managed to inflict wounds like that without leaving blood.
Agreed,
Victor murmured, watching me.
There would be no way to clean something like that up, especially not when the victim had been seen less than an hour before.
So, why would the Duke insist it was a dissenter? Tawny queried. He's not unintelligent. He would have to realize that, too. I casually placed my hand on the back of Victor's neck as I reached for a small fur quilt. His skin was warm and dry as I thought of the beaches and my mother's laugh. I knew his pain was eased the moment he took a deep, shuddering breath.
I'm unsure why the Duke believes this, but he must have his reasons.
Victor's gaze was grateful as I slipped my hand away and walked back to the chair, placing the throw in my lap. Tawny looked over at me and then took a deep breath before she refocused on Victor. Do you know who she was? Sitting straight, he was definitely more clear-eyed when he spoke again.
She was identified by one of the servants,
The victim's name was Malessa Axton.
The name was unfamiliar to me, but Tawny whispered, "Oh."
I twisted toward her. "Did you know her?"
"Not well. I know of her."
She gave a small shake of her head, sending several curls free from her twist.
"I think she came to court around the same time as I did, but she was often with one of the ladies who lives on Radiant Row. I think it's Lady Isherwood," she added.
Radiant Row was the nickname given to the row of homes closest to the castle and to Wishers Grove Park. Many of the opulent homes were owned by the Ascended.
"She was so young."
Tawny lowered her hand to her lap.
"And she had so much to look forward to."
I reached out with my senses and found that her sadness echoed my own. It wasn't the deep pain of loss that came when it was someone you knew, but the sorrow that accompanied any death, especially such a senseless one. Rylan asked Victor to step outside. After a few moments, Tawny excused herself to return to her room. I managed to stop myself from touching her. I knew if I did, I would take her pain, even though I'd done it before without her realizing. I ended up at the window, staring at the steady glow of the torches beyond the rise, when Victor re-entered.
"Thank you," he said,
as he joined me by the window. "The ache in my head was starting to get the best of me."
"Glad I could help."
"You didn't have to. I have the powder the healer made for me."
"I know. But I'm sure my gift brought you much faster relief without the dizziness and sleepiness," I said. "Those were only two of the many side effects that brownish-white powder often caused."
"That's true."
Victor fell silent for several moments, and I knew his thoughts were as troubled as mine.
I had a hard time believing that it had been a dissenter, even though I imagined something like an ice pick could have made those wounds. However, the possibility of stabbing someone in the jugular and not getting blood everywhere seemed very unlikely. But even more baffling was the motive. What did creating those types of wounds indicate that was of any benefit to their cause? Because the only thing I knew that could make those kinds of wounds went against everything the dissenters believed in.
Rylan spoke to me.
I looked over at Victor with raised brows.
"Yes?"
His sea-colored gaze flickered over my face.
"Rylan told me about Lord Mazin."
My stomach sank as I looked away. It wasn't as if I had forgotten my run-in with the Lord, but it simply wasn't the most concerning or traumatic thing to have happened in the last couple of hours.
"Did he do anything, Poppy?"
he asked. A suffocating, stinging heat crept into my face, and I pressed my cheek to the window pane. "I didn't want to talk about this. I never did." Nausea churned, and there was this weird embarrassment that made my skin feel sticky and dirty. I didn't understand why I felt that way. I knew I'd done nothing to gain the Lord's attention, and even if I had, he was still in the wrong. But when I thought about how he felt entitled to touch me, I wanted to scratch at my own skin. And I didn't want to think about how I'd been grateful for the servant's screams, having no idea what the cause had been. I pushed all of that aside so it could later come to the forefront, most likely when I was trying to sleep. He did nothing other than be an annoyance.
Truthfully?
I nodded, although that seemed a little too far from the truth. But I was okay with lying. What could Victor do with the truth? Nothing. He was smart enough to know that. A muscle throbbed in his jaw.
He needs to leave you alone.
Agreed. But I'm able to handle him. Kind of. I didn't really want to think about how close I came to doing something utterly unforgivable. If I had unsheathed my dagger and used it, there would have been no hope for me.
But gods, I wouldn't have felt a drop of guilt over it.
You shouldn't have to,
Victor replied, and he should know better. He should, and I think he does, but I don't believe he cares, I admitted, turning so I rested against the ledge of the window. You know, I saw her in that room. I saw how she was left. It made me think that she was with someone, either willingly or not. He nodded.
The healer who looked at her body believed there had been some level of physical relations before her death, but he didn't find any signs that she'd been fighting. No dried blood or skin under her nails. But no one can be sure.
I pressed my lips together. I was thinking that it wouldn't make sense for a dissenter to leave wounds like that, even if they were able to do it without being messy. What kind of message does that even send? Because the only thing that can do what was done to her, Victor's gaze met mine.
An Atlantean.
Relieved that he said it and not me, I nodded. The Duke has to know that. Anyone who saw those wounds would have to think that and question why a dissenter would mimic something that could easily be attributed to an Atlantean.
That's why I don't think it was a dissenter, he said,
and pressure clamped down on my chest.
I think it was an Atlantean.
A dissenter moving freely through Castle Tierman was concerning, but the possibility of an Atlantean being able to gain access without anyone being the wiser was something truly terrifying. I wanted to find something that would provide some sort of evidence that Victor and I were being paranoid. So at the crack of dawn, when the castle was at its quietest and Ryland guarded the room outside, I snuck down to the main floor and past the eerily quiet kitchen. Once the sun rose, I didn't have to worry about running into Lord Mazine or any ascended. Entering the banquet hall, I headed to the left, to the second door, where I often meet with Priestess Analia for my weekly lessons. As I stepped inside, I glanced across the dimly lit hall to the room where Malessa had been found. The door was closed. Tearing my gaze from it, I quietly shut the door and hurried over to the bare wooden chair, spying the book I never foresaw myself reading on my own volition. Mainly because it seemed as if I'd read The History of the War of Two Kings and the Kingdom of Solus about a million times. I carried it over to the lone window and quickly cracked it open, holding it in the faint beam of sunlight. I carefully thumbed through the thin pages, knowing if I were to tear one, Priestess Analia would be most displeased. I found the section I was looking for. It was only a handful of paragraphs that described what Atlanteans looked like, their traits, and what they were capable of. Unfortunately, all it did was confirm what I already knew. I'd never actually seen an Atlantean. At least, I didn't think I had. And that was the problem. Atlanteans looked like mortals. Even the extinct Wolven, who had once lived alongside the Atlanteans in Atlantia, could easily be mistaken for mortals, even though they had never been. The Atlanteans' ability to blend in with the populace they were known to subjugate and hunt made them deadly, expert predators. One could walk right past me, and I wouldn't know. Neither would the Ascended. For some reason, the gods hadn't taken any of that into consideration when they initiated the blessing. Scanning the paragraphs, one word stood out, causing my stomach to dip. Fangs. Although I knew what it would say, I read the sentences anyway. Between year 19 and 21, those of blooded Atlantean descent leave the vulnerable state of immaturity, wherein the ill spirits in their blood become active. Noted during this period is a disturbing increase in strength and the ability to recover from most mortal wounds as they continue to mature,
It is also to be noted that before the War of Two Kings and the extinction of the Wolven, a bonding ritual was performed between an Atlantean of a certain class and a Wolven. Not much is known about this bond, but it is believed that the Wolven in question was duty-bound to protect the Atlantean. For a true Atlantean, two upper canines will form fangs, becoming elongated and sharpened, but they will not be overly noticeable to the untrained eye. I thought of the two puncture wounds on Melissa's neck. An Atlantean's fangs may not be as overgrown and noticeable as a craven's, but the Duke could order the mouths of everyone in the castle to be checked. Admittedly, that would be invasive. I kept reading. Upon the appearance of fangs, the next phase of their maturity begins, wherein they begin to thirst. As long as their unnatural demands are met, their aging slows dramatically. It is believed that a year to mortals is equivalent to 3 decades to an Atlantean. The oldest known Atlantean was Cillian de Lohan, who saw 2,702 calendar years before his death. Meaning that an Atlantean could appear to be in their 20s, but in reality, they would be over 100 years old, possibly even closer to 200 or more. But they still aged, unlike the ascended, those blessed by the gods, who stopped at whatever age they were when they received the blessing. Only the oldest of the ascended appeared older than someone in their 30s, and they could live for an eternity. However, both the Atlanteans and ascended still lived an unfathomable amount of time, the closest thing to immortality, to the gods. I couldn't even fathom living that long. I gave a little shake of my head and kept reading. At this time, the Atlanteans are capable of passing on the ill spirits in their blood to mortals, creating a violent and destructive creature known as a craven, who share some of the physical traits of their creators. This curse is passed through a poisonous kiss. A poisonous kiss wasn't referencing two lips coming into contact with one another. The Atlanteans did what the craven did, albeit not as messily. Atlanteans bit and drank the blood of mortals, something they had to do to survive. Their enormous lifespans, strength, and healing abilities all stemmed from feeding off mortals, their primary food source. I shuddered. It had to be an Atlantean that had bit and fed from Melissa, which explained how there was no apparent bloodshed and why she had looked so incredibly pale. What it didn't explain was why the Atlantean had then snapped her neck, effectively killing her before the curse could spread. Why wouldn't the Atlantean allow her to turn? Then again, the bite wasn't exactly in a place that could easily be hidden. The bite itself was the warning to all who saw it. An Atlantean was deep within our midst. Closing the book, I carefully placed it back on the stool, thinking about how my ascension would occur on my 19th birthday, and how the Atlanteans reached a certain majority around that age. It wasn't exactly surprising. After all, our gods had been their gods at one time. But the gods no longer supported the Atlanteans. Making my way out of the room, I started for the kitchens, when my gaze landed on the room Melissa had been found in. I needed to go back to my chambers before the staff became active. But that wasn't what I did. I crossed the space and went to the door, finding it unlocked when I turned the handle. Before I could really think about what I was doing and where I was, I slipped inside, grateful that the wall sconces cast a soft glow throughout the room. The settee was gone, the space bare. Accent chairs remained, as did the round coffee table, with some sort of floral arrangement neatly placed in the center. I crept forward, unsure of what I was even looking for, and wondering if I'd even know if I found it. Other than the missing furniture, nothing seemed out of place, but the room felt oddly cold, as if a window had been open. But there were no windows on this side of the banquet hall. What had Melissa been doing in here? Reading a book? Or waiting for one of the other ladies in wait? Or perhaps Lady Isherwood? Or had she snuck in here to meet with someone she trusted? Had she been blindsided by the attack? A shiver danced down my spine. I wasn't sure what was worse, being betrayed or blindsided. Actually, I did know. Being betrayed would be worse. I stepped forward, stopping short as I glanced down. Something was behind the leg of one of the chairs. Bending down, I reached under the chair and picked up the object. My head tilted as I ran a thumb over the smooth, soft white surface. It was a petal. My brows knitted as the scent reached me. Jasmine. For some reason, my stomach roiled, which was odd. I normally liked the smell. Rising, I looked at the vase and found the source. Several white lilies were spaced throughout the arrangement. No jasmine. Frowning, I looked down at the petal. Where did this come from? I shook my head as I walked over to the bouquet, placing the petal in with the rest of the flowers, as I gave the room one last look. There was no blood on the cream carpet, something that would have definitely stained if it had spilled. I had no idea what I was doing. If evidence had been found, it had been removed. And even if it hadn't been, I didn't have experience in this. I just wanted to be able to do something, or to find anything that would put our worst fears to rest. But there was nothing to be done or found here, other than what was most likely reality. And what did I believe about the truth? That it often could be terrifying, yes. But with truth came power. And I was never one to hide from the truth. I'd made my way back to my room that morning without any issues, and ended up remaining in it the entire day, which wasn't exactly all that different from any other day. Tawny had stopped by briefly until one of the mistresses summoned her. No one was sequestered, but I thought that the attack would at least slow down the preparations for the rite. Obviously, that was a silly thought. I doubted the earth-shaking would get in the way of the rite. I spent a lot of time thinking about what had happened to Melissa. And the more I thought about why the Duke would lie about the attacker being a dissenter, the more it started to make sense. Just like Phillips, the guard from the Rise hadn't wanted to talk about Finley's death to stop panic and fear from taking root and spreading. But it didn't explain why the Duke wasn't being honest with the Royal Guard. If there was an Atlantean among us, the guards needed to be prepared. Because while the Ascended were powerful and strong, the Atlanteans were too, if not more. Shortly before dusk, Rylan knocked on my door. "You want to try for the garden?" I thought I would ask. "I don't know." I glanced at the windows. "You think it will be okay?" Rylan nodded. "I do." I really could use the fresh air and time away from my own thoughts. It just seemed... I wasn't sure. As if it weren't even 24 hours after Melissa had been killed. Yet it was like any other evening. "You don't have to stay in here," Rylan said, and I glanced back at him. "Not unless that's what you want to do. What happened last night with the poor girl and with the Lord has nothing to do with what you find joy in." A small smile tugged at my lips. "And you're probably tired of standing in the hall." Rylan chuckled. "Possibly." I grinned as I stepped back. "Let me get my veil." It took only a few minutes for me to don the headdress and become ready. This time, there were no interruptions as we made our way to the garden. However, there were servants who did the stop and stare thing. But as I continued down the path of one of my favorite places on the grounds of the castle, my worries and obsessive thoughts slipped away
like they always did. While I was in the sprawling garden, my mind calmed, and everything and anything ceased to nibble away at me. I wasn't thinking about Melissa and the Atlantean who'd gained access to the castle. I wasn't haunted by the image of Agnes holding her husband's limp hand, or what had happened in the Red Pearl with Hawk. I wasn't even thinking about the upcoming ascension and what Victor had said. In the Queen's Garden, I was simply present, instead of being caught up in the past or the future full of what-ifs. I wasn't sure why the gardens were called what they were. As far as I knew, it had been a very long time since the Queen had been to Macedonia. But I guessed the Duke and Duchess had named it after her as some sort of homage. Never once while I lived with the Queen had I seen her step foot in the lush gardens of the palace. I glanced over at Rylan. Normally, the only threat he may face was an unexpected rain shower. But tonight, he was more alert than I'd ever seen him in the garden. His gaze continuously scanned the numerous pathways. I used to think these trips bored him, but never once had he complained. Victor, on the other hand, would have grumbled about literally anything else we could have been doing. Come to think of it, Rylan might actually enjoy these outings, and not just because he wasn't standing in the hall outside my room. A cool wind whipped through the garden, stirring the many leaves and lifting the edge of my veil. I wished I could remove the headdress. It was transparent enough for me to see, but it did make traveling at dusk and beyond in low-lit places a bit difficult. I made my way past a large water fountain that featured a marble and limestone statue of a veiled maiden. Water poured endlessly from the pitcher she held, the sound reminding me of the rolling waves crashing in and out of the coves of the Stroud Sea. Many coins shimmered under the water, a token to the gods in hopes that whatever the wisher wanted would be granted. I neared the outermost parts, which fed into a small but thick outcropping of jacaranda trees that camouflaged the inner walls that kept Castle Tierman separated from the rest of the city. The trees were tall, reaching over 50 feet, and in Macedonia, bold lavender-colored trumpet-shaped flowers blossomed all year round. Only during the coldest months, when snow threatened, did the leaves fall, blanketing the ground in a sea of purple. They were breathtaking, but I appreciated them not just for their beauty, but also for what they provided. The jacaranda trees hid the crumbling section of the wall that Victor and I often used to leave the grounds unseen in order to access Wisher's Grove. I stopped in front of the mass of intertwined vines that climbed up and over interlocking wooden trellises, as wide as the jacaranda trees were tall. Glancing up at the rapidly darkening sky, I then fixed my gaze ahead. Rylan came to stand behind me. "We made it in time." The corners of my lips tilted up before my grin faded. "We did tonight." Only a few moments passed, and then the sun conceded defeat to the moon. The last rays of sunlight pulled away from the vines. Hundreds of buds scattered over the vines trembled and then slowly peeled open, revealing lush petals, the shade of a starless midnight. Night-blooming roses. I closed my eyes. I inhaled the faintly sweet aroma. They were at their most fragrant upon opening, and then again at dawn.
"They are quite beautiful," Rylan commented.
"They remind me—" His words ended in a strangled grunt. Eyes flying open, I spun around, and a scream of horror knotted in my throat as Rylan staggered backward, an arrow protruding from his chest. A look of disbelief marked his features as he lifted his chin.
"Run!"
he gasped, blood trickling from the corner of his lips.
"Run!"
Chapter 7. "Rylan!" I rushed to his side, throwing an arm around him as his legs crumpled. His weight was too much, and when he fell, I went down with him, my knees cracking as they hit the pathway.
The impact didn't register as I pressed my hands around Rylan's wound, trying to staunch the flow of blood. I opened my senses to him, expecting to feel pain. Rylan! Whatever words I was about to say died on my tongue, tasting of ash. I felt nothing, and that wasn't right. He'd have to be in so much pain, and I could help that. I could take his pain, but I felt nothing. And when I looked at his face, I didn't want to see what I saw. His eyes were open, gaze fixed yet unseeing on the sky above. I shook my head, but under my hands his chest didn't move. No, I whispered, blood turning to ice and slush. Rylan. There was no answer, no response. Underneath him, a pool of blood spread across the walkway, seeping into the symbols etched in the stone. A circle with an arrow piercing the center. Infinity. Power. The royal crest. I pressed down on his chest, my trembling hands soaked with blood, refusing to believe. A footstep echoed like thunder behind me. I twisted at the waist. A man stood a few feet from me, a bow at his side. A hooded cloak shielded his face.
You're gonna do as I say, maiden.
The man spoke in a voice that sounded like churning gravel.
And then no one will be hurt.
No one? I gasped.
Well, no one else will be hurt, he amended.
I stared up at the man and Rylan's chest still didn't move under my palms. In the back of my mind, I knew it would never rise again. He'd been dead before he even hit the ground. He was gone. Pain, so sharp and so real, cut through me. Something hot hit my veins and poured into my chest, filling up the empty space. My hands stopped trembling. The grip of panic and shock lessened, replaced by rage.
Stand,
he ordered. I rose carefully, aware of how my gown, tacky with Rylan's blood, stuck to the knees of my thin leggings underneath. My heart slowed as my hand slipped into the slit along the gown's side. Was this the same person who'd killed Melissa? If so, he was an Atlantean, and I'd have to be quick if I had any hope.
We're going to walk out of here, he said. You're not going to make a sound, and you're not going to give me any trouble, are you, maiden?
My fingers closed around the smooth, cool handle of the dagger. I shook my head no.
Good.
He took a step toward me.
I don't want to have to hurt you, but if you give me any reason, I will not hesitate.
I remained completely still, the heat of my fury building in me, brimming to the surface. Rylan had died because of me. That was his duty as my personal guard. But he was dead because this man thought he could take me. Melissa had possibly been assaulted and then murdered. And for what? If he was an Atlantean or a dissenter? He wouldn't use me for ransom. I'd be used to send a message, just like the three ascended who had been kidnapped from Three Rivers. They were returned in pieces. At the moment, I didn't care what the man's agenda was. All that mattered was that he'd killed Rylan, who found the night-blooming roses just as beautiful as I did. And he might have been the one to kill Melissa, leaving her body on display in such a careless, disrespectful way.
This is good, he cajoled. You're behaving. That's smart of you. Keep being smart and this will be painless for you.
He reached for me. Unsheathing the dagger, I shot forward, dipping under his arm.
What the?
I sprung up behind him, fisting the back of the man's cloak.